time for Sportslet 101. Bruce Pratt here in studio with us. We talked a little bit about this book and looking forward to reading it from a guy who's been on with us a couple of times in the past, David Davis.
Yeah, he's was on with us for Waterman, his book on Duke Hanamoku, and Showdown at Shepherd's Bush about the 1908 Olympic marathon, men's marathon. Then, of course, there was no women's marathon at that time, which really kicked off the distance running craze in Europe and the U.S. I love David's books. I never talk about a book on this segment that I don't like or I don't think people will enjoy. The first time ever, I'm going to say this is a book everybody should read. And I read because I want to discover things. I want to learn things. I want to be entertained as well. This is a marvelously well-written book, but I think the blanks in my knowledge that it fills in are probably as many as any book I've read in a very, very long time. So many things I thought I knew. I was active with Special Olympics when I worked at BAPS. I had a brother-in-law who died at age 40 who would have loved that, who had numerous disabilities, didn't get to be involved in it. I've always had an interest in sports for those who've been, as Bill Veeck said, not handicapped but crippled by some kind of an injury. But what I learned here, this book, Wheels of Courage, is subtitled How Paralyzed Veterans from World War II Invented Wheelchair Sports, Fought for Disability Rights, and Inspired a Nation. If it were only that simple. What we're going to do is I'm going to introduce the book and one of its main themes this week, follow up next week with the other two, and then the week after that, David will be on with us. And I promise people listening, this is not overkill. This is very, very complex. And we're going to start with the history of the treatment of spinal cord injuries, because it's a fascinating subject and it is at times remarkably depressing. In World War I, if you had a spinal cord injury resulting in paraplegia, you died 90%+ of the time. 90% of the time, because they didn't know how to treat them. It got better by World War II because it was a little easier to transport people to field hospitals, but they didn't often know what to do with them when they got there. But then two things happened, and it has to do with World War II. One is a German Jew by the name of Ludwig Guttmann fled Germany and ended up in England, and he became the head spinal cord man at a place called Stoke Mandeville Hospital in England. That became the place from which the Paralympics were born in the 1940s. He was the first person on the continent to write extensively and do extensive research on paraplegia, noting that the difference in paraplegics, there's no one kind of paraplegic, depending at which vertebrae the spinal cord has been compromised or lost. And he knew that it was important for people, for their respiratory health and to fight infection, to be active. This is before penicillin was really, available. So lots of people were dying from infections. They were dying from urinary infections, all these kinds of things, because we didn't know how the rest of the body functioned without a complete and intact spinal system. So Ludwig began his training, and at the same time as this was being developed and World War II was upon us, at the Birmingham Hospital in Van Nuys, California, paralyzed veterans were being treated by a few doctors there, and they were onto the same kind of thing. They were figuring out ways for these veterans to be able to do things that for a long time people couldn't do. In the 19th and 20th century, there were American cities that passed laws banning paraplegics being out in public.
Wow.
They were called ugly laws. And these people were either to be cared for at home by a relative or live in an institution, and they were, as the word was, confined to a wheelchair. And there was no effort to change that. And if you were wealthy, if you were Roosevelt and you were stricken with polio, you could get the what was then the best medical care. You could get the best kind of technology. What happens is these guys are coming home from war and they're being placed in wheelchairs, which are really more like your grandmother's wing chair with some big wooden wheels on them. And they're not moving around. They're not getting into the pool. They're not working on their upper bodies. Well, the first Paralympic Games, if you will, the Stoke Mandeville Games, involved only archery because that was felt that was something that paraplegics could compete on an almost equal level with quote able-bodied or full-bodied people. Now, I want to skip ahead for 1 second to make a point, is that one of the reasons this is important is that many of these paralyzed veterans were treated very badly by society when they came back. By the time we get to Korea with the invention of the MASH, which we know from television, but was a very important invention, a forward field hospital where people could actually do surgery, and Vietnam, we saw the mortality rate from wounds, war wounds, be cut in half. And it dropped from 4.5% to 2.3%, which is obviously roughly half. At the same time, paralyzed veterans were getting treated immediately, and many of them were able to recover some of their body functions that they didn't think they would have. There's some great misnomers. Many people think that all paraplegics are unable to father children, males. That's not true. Can't have children, females. That's not true. That it's a very difficult and complex thing, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm not going to attempt to explain it. But I will say that what happened is the attitude changed, and film buffs will know exactly why, what film it was that really changed the attitude of the American people after World War II.
Best years of their lives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That changed the attitude when they saw that the veterans that had been hurt, compromised in many ways, could lead very productive lives. For the first time ever, houses and apartments were built so people could live on their own. Cars were fixed and motorcycles were fixed with hand control so these people could be able to drive and move and have some mobility. And God bless the Bulova Watch Company, which started a training program in Queens and sponsored some of the earliest of all the wheelchair basketball teams. The focus next week will be on how wheelchair basketball throughout the United States at various hospitals and military facilities began to be what led us into more disability sports and greater understanding of disabled people, particularly the fact that there's a difference between people who are paraplegic, people who can't play basketball because they have are amputees or because of polio. And we'll get into the minutiae of that next time. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but these veterans became the advocates, and a few of their able-bodied friends became the other advocates that really turned America around, so that on March 10th, 1948, 15,000 people went to see the New York Knicks play the St. Louis Bombers in Madison Square Garden, a game that would never have had 15,000 people, watched a wheelchair basketball game kick it off, and that's where it all began. We'll get back to that point next week.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. And again, we'll have David Davis on to talk about the book
on the 18th. Yeah.
Great.